Okay, Google, find me a podcast about War Machine and Hordes, please.
All right, I have a podcast ready to go. Let's start with Tangential with Sung Su.
Okay, Google, do you have any more information about the podcast?
It's a War Machine and Hordes podcast whose goal is to educate, inspire, and entertain.
Okay, Google, play Tangential with Sung Su.
Welcome to Tangential with Sung Su. I'm your host, Sung Su. And for episode one, I thought I'd take a minute, do a slight double introduction, and explain why I made this podcast. This year, in 2018, I decided to start traveling to some larger War Machine events. I wasn't sure what to expect, but have been pleasantly surprised with all the incredible and amazing people I've met along the way. I decided to start this podcast to record and share some of those delightful conversations with the rest of you. I hope you find them as entertaining, educational, and inspiring as I do. Joining us for the inaugural episode of Tangential with Sung Su, we've got the heart and soul of Montreal War Machine, the rightful King of Scotland, Canadian WTC player, and professional knife turner, Matt McWaters. Without further ado, let's get Matt on the line. Matt, how are you?
You know, still breathing. I've been told that's a pretty good place to be. I'm excited. This will be fun. And it'll be, you know, always good talking to you.
Yeah, it's great to catch up. Matt and I just met at MuseCon, where you skipped out in the royal wedding for. Was there any backlash from the gentry about that?
Well, you know, I was trying to convince them that a wedding at the hotel in the middle of Iowa was the correct choice to begin with anyways. And they were not too receptive of that idea.
I will, I'll DM Meghan Markle when we're done. I'll see why she doesn't like Iowa. But the reason we have you on is recently your Pokemon analogy of sweepers and pivots has been all over social media. I was hoping today we could sit down, talk about what goes into making a tournament pair and how the concepts of sweepers and pivots could be used during this process. So if we could start off by just explaining the concept of sweepers and pivots, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so... I'm gonna save the Pokemon explanation. We'll just get deep into the War Machine explanation. So sweepers are your lists that pose the hardest and strongest questions in your faction. So like the idea is that you have a list that the question requires a very specific subset of tools to deal with. It's like, here is this insanely powerful list, and then you try to drop it as much as possible. Pivots are lists that give you the tools to win matchups that you have no right winning. A good example of what I'm talking about here would be you look at a list pair and you're like, man, this sweeper, this crazy strong skew just smashes all of these things. And then like you're like, well, now I'm kind of in this weird list chicken situation where they have a list that actually beats my sweeper. Huh, what do I drop? Well, the answer to that question is always your pivot. So like, pivots as a design function are built to have as many independent questions in them as possible. They allow you to, like, essentially they want to make your opponent have to make as many mental faculties checks as possible in the hope that when they fail one, you just win the game off of it.
So obviously the science and the quote-unquote art that goes into making a tournament pair isn't new, but how do you think pivots and sweepers, that concept, can help simplify this for people?
A classic strategy in list pairing for War Machine is question-answer. The idea is that you have a strong list that poses questions and then another list that answers the problem that your questions have. So I think that this ends up being a trap most of the time in our modern War Machine. There's an impossible amount of things in the game at this point. When we talk about pivots and sweepers, the simplest way to understand them in a tournament pair and how they make it simpler is you have a list that you feel like is incredibly strong, but you don't really understand why. Next follow-up question is, do I feel like this list is strong because it forces opponents to make difficult decisions and struggle? If so, that's probably a pivot. If you think the list is strong because it forces your opponent to have to deal with an impossible task, like, as an example, killing 10 armed 20 heavies, then it's probably a sweeper. How this makes pairings like way more simpler to understand and allows you to be critical of them is if you have a pairing and you're trying to advance it and you're trying to figure it out, a lot of the time it just comes down to identifying what's your sweeper and what's your pivot and what you need to do to make one better at that job.
Great. So I think we understand the basic concepts of a sweeper and a pivot. A sweeper asks a really hard question. A pivot is able to ask a lot of questions and you hope your opponent makes a mistake. So let's start from the basics then. I'm a War Machine player playing Faction X. Let's say Kador. I've been playing for a while now and want to start playing in events.
What's step one for taking it to that level?
So the first step in getting better at anything, or I mean doing anything at all, is to identify what your goals are. Now, maybe it's, since this is you're starting to play in events, maybe it's major events, maybe it's minor events, maybe you've been whatever. You need to identify what the first step and the last step should be. So like maybe the first step is identifying a caster that you really like, or like identifying five of them, whatever, you do you. Narrow those down to a caster that you enjoy and find something that you can grind games with and feel strong. And you should set goals with not only that caster, but with yourself about short-term, manageable, attainable, realistic, and time-sensitive. And the whole point is to set goals that are personal to yourself, that are attainable, and are time-sensitive. So like the idea being that like maybe you only play a game a week, maybe you play two games a week, but your goal should be to, in those two games a week, get as much from them as possible. Maybe you play 10 games a week. Your goal should be to get as many from those games as possible too. But whatever your goals are, they should be personal to you. You shouldn't let someone else set your goals. And I think the most important goal of all is to have fun with what you're doing. Like, it doesn't matter how many games you grind. If you're not having a good time, you're not going to take as much from them as you can, as you should. So back to your question of what's step one? Step one is to find a caster that you enjoy. Find and test that caster into oblivion. Figure out all the different ways that it works. Find out what its weaknesses and strengths are. Find out what the optimal list for you with that caster is. Once you've found that, then you can start working on your secondary list. Now, once you've played a caster enough times and you've really dug deep into it and you've played into as many things as possible, you start to get an idea of what it's bad into and what it's good into, obviously. Once you've figured out what it's bad into, then you can start, you know, really developing a pairing. So, like, let's say you're a Kador player and you're like, man, I really love Karchev. I play him with all these jacks. I just push my models forward and I play stompy robots. Speaking from personal experience, super fun. You're like, man, this is really good, but it's really bad into these specific lists. And like, it's impossible to have a list that answers all of those specifically bad matchups. That's just how War Machine works right now. There's too many possibilities in the game. So you're like, well, Karchev is like this really strong skew, so he's definitely a sweeper. So what I need to pair him with is something that pivots well, something that gives me an out into matchups I shouldn't be able to win. Something that has like a really good assassination run, something that's a really good scenario presence, something that lets me win games on an axis that isn't only attrition. So once you've established like what you're looking for, whether it be a pivot or a sweeper, start to go through the list of casters and kind of ideas of lists to find what that pairing is. So let's say you're a Karchev player and you're like, man, I really need to find a pivot. Maybe you look at Old Witch and you're like, man, Old Witch does all these really cool things. She has like rerolls, blind, scourge. She just has a credible assassination run all the time. She does everything I want her to do, and rockets are all good in these other situations too. Now you've developed a theoretical pairing that makes sense. And then you can take that pairing to local game nights, to tournaments, to events, and test your theories. Maybe your theory is wrong. Maybe you don't need Old Witch. Maybe you need something else. But the most important thing is to test it, find out, and play as much as you can into as many things as you can. Remember, you're here to have fun, though. Winning is largely meaningless. Like, no matter how many conventions you win or anything like that, the only thing you ever get out of them is your ego. And while that can feel good in the moment, it's much better to play something you enjoy the entire time, because you're going to lose a lot. And nothing sucks more than playing something that you hate playing and losing with it. It's like, if you play something you enjoy, at least at the end of the day, you're like, man, I lost this game because, you know, I messed up or whatever it may be. But at least I played this one caster I had super fun playing the entire day. And I don't mean to, like, don't hamstring yourself on purpose. Don't, like, take the worst caster in the faction and be like, well, I like it, so it's good. You know, strike that middle balance where you're like, this is kind of fun, but also really strong.
No, absolutely. I mean, that definitely resonates personally. I don't know if you know this, I played Signar for a couple months, and I was playing Haley 3, Nemo 3, and I was winning, but I certainly wasn't enjoying playing it. I didn't enjoy forcing my locals to play into that pair. I took little to no pride in the wins I racked up, so that's ultimately why I switched over to Convergence. So great. We kind of went over, you find that list you really like. You determine whether it's a pivot or a sweeper, and we go from there. So now that I've determined on caster X and maybe caster Y, how do I know if that's a good pairing? How do I predict the tools that I'm going to need in my pairing list?
The first step is to really identify what the tool, like you said, how do you know the tools? But it's to identify what you think the tools will be, to come up with a prediction of what the meta you're going to be playing in is. And the only way you can do that is through experience. The best way to build experience is to play games. If you talk to almost any Canadian WTC player, they're going to tell you that they play, you know, between 8 to 10 games a week, unless they're like the really extreme ones that are pushing, you know, 15 to 25 a week. There's a few of us, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, of course, not consistently. It's all up and down. But as you play more and you build a larger experience pool and you go to more events and you develop kind of like a sense of where the meta is, your predictions become more accurate. And like, you won't know a pairing's good until you've played it. Like, simply put, filling yourself with doubt about your pairing is the best way to build a bad pairing. If you think a pairing's good, play it. See what happens. If you lose, you find some holes, adjust for the next event. Remember, War Machine is a long-term game. The goal isn't to win your first event. The goal is to play, have fun, and maybe down the line, win some events.
No, I think that's a lot of great information, and I wanted to hit on something real quickly. You said two things I really liked. A, you said play it into everything. One of the things that frustrates me so much is when people go, oh, I can't play that into this. I can't play that into your list. I'm like, why? And like, well, I've never played it, but it looks really bad. I'm like, well, I've always encouraged people to play that matchup out. Establish for yourself that it's horrible. The other thing is there's a lot of podcasts out there, a lot of hashtag fake news. And I feel like a lot of people don't formulate their own opinions. They take opinions of like floating talking heads. Oh, everyone knows that's bad. Everyone knows this is the best unit in this faction. What do you have to say about that?
Funny being on a podcast talking about how bad podcasts are. I think that there's a lot of merit to podcasts. They have some really good information on them. But I also think that the community as a whole kind of has this really kind of ridiculous parrot effect where once someone wins something with something, or once someone kind of does well with something, or if someone hasn't ever done well with something, the community as a whole takes that and says, this is why. Like, let's say as a thing, I go on a podcast next week and I say, Sorsha 3 is the best caster in Kador, and I take her and I win an event with her. People are going to be looking at that saying like, oh, this is true. That guy won an event with Sorsha 3. She must be the best caster in Kador. Or conversely, like I do something and I say something else is bad, say something else is good. Doesn't really matter. That's a source of, you know, information that's personal to me. It's my opinion.
I mean, one of the other things I was just going to mention quickly is a lot of my locals talk about, oh, this is bad into the meta. I heard it on this podcast or that podcast. And I'm like, that podcast meta is totally different than the Colorado meta. Like, I know the Colorado meta is different, and I always try to prepare more for the national meta before I run into people like you at MuseCon. So to say something's good or bad, again, it's so relative.
Yeah, so I mean, of course, all the metas are different. I travel a lot. I think it's 11 cons, or sorry, 8 cons this year before WTC, and then 3 more afterwards. And then, like, on top of, you know, traveling and playing games and all the different metas I go to, it's insane how many people have different lists, casters, and strategies everywhere I go. Just talking about MuseonCon, I brought Gatsby 3, who in my meta everyone's practiced against, and he seems not powerful at all. Like, I personally have a 100% win rate against Gatsby 3 between conventions and local games. And I took him to MuseonCon, and I lost one game with him, and everyone I played against had theoretical outs for the matchup, but had never played against it. So, like, just because someone's heard something is good or heard something is bad doesn't make it true at all. It's all about player experience and expectations. And I think that's kind of a really big thing, is player expectations are vastly different than what the reality of the situation is. So, like, you may expect that list X beats list Y, but in the reality, it's all about positioning on the table, clock management, terrain, scenario. There's so many variables on every table that you can make a game out of any matchup just based off those alone. Very recently, I played a game I thought was a slam dunk and proceeded to get almost tabled. Like, and sure, I had a 45-minute clock advantage just because my opponent went in the tank for 30 minutes and almost tabled me. And like, I thought that was a slam dunk matchup. Those things happen, and it's just, there's a variance between the experience everyone has and like the every table game state. So when a podcast tells you this is good or this is bad, be critical of it. Look at your own things. Look at your own experience and think for yourself. The worst thing you could ever do in War Machine is something else because someone told you to do it.
No, I think that's fantastic advice. And I feel like we're going off on a tangent, but I think it's good information. So one other thing is I feel like the meta is shifting quicker than it ever has in the past. One reason for that might be CID. Rules are changing more rapidly. The other thing is I think people are just doing a lot more exploring. Like you said, we're so wide in the game right now. So what should players be doing once they establish a pair to be sure that pair stays on par with the rest of the meta?
So nothing stays on par for long. You have to be constantly adjusting and exploring and finding things. Like, being like, just to be realistic here, talk to people, schedule games in other metas, travel. If you want to know how a meta is, go to that meta, go to all the different places. Like, if you want to know how the national meta is, attend national events, talk to people from the national meta. They'll assimilate as much information from as many people as possible. Don't regard it all as absolute truths, but take it into consideration. And I think this is a really big concept in War Machine right now, is that there's like over 4,000 entries in the game or something like that. It's impossible to know everything all the time. You're going to forget rules. You're going to forget things. You're just not going to know about some interactions, especially with how Infernal rulings work. Like, there's just going to be things you don't know. And the only way you learn those things is by experiencing the information firsthand. Sometimes the only way you learn something is by losing to it. Just go and play games in as many different places as you can and talk to as many people. That is how you, you know, keep up with the meta. What do you do if your pairing starts feeling left behind? Make the efforts to update it to what you think is possible. If you end up with a list pair that just doesn't work anymore, like you show up to a tournament and one of your lists does nothing, then maybe it's time to start evaluating a new list pair. The worst, like one of the worst things you could do is think like, this list is hyper powerful no matter what my opponent plays. You will eventually come across something that just that is not true. Very recently, Gatsby 3-9 Slayers has been defining the Crix meta. Everyone's playing it. Everyone's playing and doing well with it or doing bad with it. I have no idea. But if you play a game and you're playing Gatsby 3 and you encounter a list like Armored Core that you've never played against and you think, well, Gatsby 3 just beats this. The truth of the situation is that may be true, or since you've never played against it before, you don't know that it's actually super good against Gatsby 3, and it denies you souls and you don't get any game into it. And that's how you get left behind in the meta.
No, I think that's phenomenal. And for those people who've been following my journey a little bit, 2018, it's been the first year since Mark 1. I've traveled to national events. And one thing I really will say, people like you, all the other people, they're actually really friendly. They're very open. They love to answer questions. They love to talk shop about the game. So by all means, if you have questions, I encourage you to reach out to people. Take anything that's said on Facebook with a grain of salt, but look for people with a decent track record. Look for people with knowledge to base or back up, their opinions. And I do think you can definitely glean some great information out there out of people.
I definitely feel like that almost every top level player, every competitive player loves talking about the game. We're all passionate about it. Like anyone who tries hard at the game is passionate about it. So definitely reach out to any of us. There's no reason not to. Like, talk to us, ask questions. The worst thing that could, like, the worst case that could come from that is that we're forced to evaluate our own opinions. Like, I can't tell you how many times someone's messaged me about my Denny 2 list or my Shade 1 list. And then, like, I have to sit there and I have to explain how a process works in a game, how a matchup works. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow, that actually doesn't work the way I thought it worked. Now I have to change my entire list because this person is giving me an insight. Maybe not on their, like, on purpose from them, but just having to explain something can help clarify it for ourselves. It's super useful for everyone involved.
Yeah, in IT, they call that rubber ducking. I have a pet rock on my desk and I talk to it during work. And it's just the process of going through it. Oh, this does that does this. Oh, wait, that doesn't actually work. Can a lot of times shed a lot of insight. I was one of those people with a lot of theoretical practice into Gatsby 3 Slayers when I met at MuseCon. And just our conversation after the game, I thought was super productive for myself, just to kind of walk through things. And I think one of the things there that we both focused on great is let's focus on things we can control. Let's not worry about, oh, if I only go first, I win. My dice roll better, I win. So I think trying to be critical of yourself, look at mistakes you've made honestly, and moving from there is a fantastic starting point.
I definitely agree.
So to get back on topic a little bit, can we quickly go through some sweeper and pivot pairings in the current meta? I believe Gatsby 3 would be a sweeper, that hard skew, and then Denny 2 would be a pivot in your personal list. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's a really good summary of, you know, sweeper pivot as an idea. Gatsby 3 is a strong skew that presents a very, like, specific question. It has one question, it asks it as hard as possible, and then Denny 2 is like, well, instead of asking like specifically a single strong question, I'm going to ask a bucket of really medium strength questions, and eventually you're not going to have an answer. And because you don't have an answer to one of those questions, I get to win the game off of that. So that is a classical sweeper pivot pairing. Some other common ones are Nemo 3, Haley 3. Nemo 3 is the sweeper. He asks, can you deal with all the lightning damage and basically just nonsense? And Haley 3 is like, I have an impossible amount of questions I ask, and I'm an incredibly difficult list to play and play against. Can you deal with it? Madrek 1, Borka 2, specifically Tim's Borka 2. Madrek 1 asks, can you deal with these champions? And can you deal with just tough, no knockdown, dumb, dicey games? And then Borka 2 is like, can you remember these buckets of rules plus killing heavies? And a very interesting one for me is Maelok Arcadius. So Maelok is most certainly a sweeper. It's a really strong skew that asks a very specific question. And Arcadius is like, I guess I spend 20 minutes in the tank and try to kill you this turn, because Arcadius always has an assassination run. If you look on any kind of tournament reporting website, you will see that almost every good pairing tries to implement this. You could look into any high-ranking masters list and find this principle in play. It's not a new principle, sweeper pivot. It's something that's been in the War Machine community pretty much forever. Like question-answer, it's a classical idea. Just the new terminology helps us talk about it in a more critical way. It gives us the tools to critically analyze the pairing. So when you have a pairing that's like Gatsby 3, Scar 1, you look at a pairing and you're like, these are just two really big question lists. Neither of them pivot very well. They're like balls on a track. They only go one direction. But when you start looking at Denny too, it's like she can go any direction she wants. She's a bunch of turns and weird angles. And that becomes the difference. And that's what makes a good pairing.
So with our hypothetical Kador player, he's looking to prep for his first event. He feels pretty good about his list pair now. Karcher, Hold Witch, Stompy Robots, lots of rockets, what's not to love? What else should he be doing?
Advancing in War Machine is personal to the player themselves. So we all have our weak areas, and oftentimes those weak areas tend to start from, you know, bad play habits. Where, like, first of all, clock management. So a lot of players struggle with this, no matter what level you're at. Like, even the best players in the world struggle with clock management from time to time. It's a major problem. As you play more games and you find more depth in every game, you start spending more time on the clock exploring that depth. Maybe you find a really cool play angle and, like, it takes 20 minutes for you to plan everything out. But the first step you should always take is playing your lists on a 45-minute clock. I can't stress this enough. The second you're able to play your lists a 7-turn game on a 45-minute clock without clocking out, you're going to go to a convention and you're going to be like, wow, I have an hour to play. I guess I'll go in the tank for 20 minutes this turn and still be fine. As a player, Bubba Dalton told me, he's like, you should be playing 7-minute turns. This was like when I was just getting into competitive War Machine. He's like, you should play 7-minute turns. So I did it. This was in prep for War Machine Weekend. 7-minute turns, because it's going to be a time turns format at War Machine Weekend. So I played for 3 months on 7-minute turns. So if you're not familiar with the format, that's every turn has 7 minutes and you get 1 5-minute turn extension. So I was playing Kador at the time, so 7-minute turns was super easy. I was actually playing Karchev Old Witch. And every turn was super easy. I got really good at it. And I would play my games and I would always be under 7 minutes on my clock or on my turns. Then I went to War Machine Weekend and they were like, oh, by the way, it's death clock, 60 minutes on your clock. And I ended every game with a half hour on my clock. Some opponents clocked out. I was like, I have all the time in the world. And I think the biggest thing you take away from clock management skills is learning to plan on your opponent's time. The second you're able to do that and, like, plan your turn ahead, you start being able to control the pacing of the game. You start being able to leverage clock as a resource instead of as your biggest liability as a player. A lot of players, after clock, struggle with self-doubt. Especially when you play against players you feel are better than you, like your first time you play against a high ranking player, or maybe like you're playing a matchup you're not super confident in, or like we're all nerds, so maybe you have some self-esteem issues. Like all of those things together You start doubting your decisions. You start ending up in like this weird analysis paralysis where you go in the tank forever and just eat up all your clock time. And like, you just can't make a decision because you doubt all of your decisions. Sometimes it's something as simple as like you find a cool play, but you just don't think your opponent's bad enough to have given you that. And you just don't go for it. Like accepting that self-doubt's fine and like just being able to critically look at a situation and say, okay, I need to do this. My first instinct is right. Let's go is very important. And then finally, if I had to, you know, working on anything at all here, tilt control, being in charge of your own emotions here is very, very important. It's something that everyone struggles with. Like everything I've talked here is everyone struggles with these things. And tilt control is the most important, well, one of the most important things you could work on. There's so much that happens in a game, like dice, mistakes, forgetting rules, just weird interactions with people can cause you to tilt a little bit. Like maybe you pre-measure something a bunch of times and you place the model incorrectly yourself. Like, and your opponent's not entitled to give that to you. Like you're like, I measure this, just place the model. And then like you go to do something else and you're like, oh, now he's out of range. Like, and then some people at that point just lose, like they just lose all control of the game. They go like super depressed, or they lose the ability to make good decisions. Just focus, work through it, be in control of your tilt. I think those are what you need to work on.
No, I think all that's fantastic. 7-minute turns gives me flashes back to Hardcore and Mark 1, but it was a great learning experience. Even the game was smaller in scale back then. But playing at a 45-minute clock is something I've done personally, and it definitely helps, gets those reps in. And then you do feel like Superman when you get that 60-minute clock. As far as doubt and things like that, like you said, yeah, we are all nerds, and some people definitely struggle with that. I think that's definitely a great thing to work on. And then the other thing I'll say to add on to that is, like, don't be afraid to lose. Like, so many people say, oh, I'm not ready to go to this local steamroller. And I'm like, what do you mean you're not ready? You're not ready to pay $5 and pay 4 games of War Machine? It seems like a great day, even if you go 0-4. So just get out there, play the games.
Talking about self-doubt, it's not something that only rookie players struggle with either. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a car with some of the best players in North America, and we're like driving to an event, or, you know, driving home from an event, and all I hear about from the other players is how they're going to lose some of their games. Like, they're like, oh, I'm not very practiced with this list, I'm going to lose it this way, or like, oh, I didn't get enough reps in this week, you know, this is a problem. Like, these are some of the best players in North America, maybe the world, and even they struggle with that doubt. Like, even they in the middle of their games are like, oh, I don't know if I should be doing this, oh, you know, like, and they sometimes enter into that analysis paralysis. Like, no one's immune to it, no matter how much experience you have, no matter how much you think you are. And being able to recognize like how much your emotional like state affects your gameplay is very important for winning not only conventions, tournaments, but also just having a good time while you play. I can't tell you, like, I played you twice at MomCon.
I remember.
And in both games, you make critical positioning errors after you had already planned out your turn, and you didn't take them back. You were just like, I totally offered. And you were like, no, I've made that mistake. We're going to move on past that. And I think that's one of the biggest things I've ever seen anyone do in the game, is accepting mistakes and learning how to improve and solve past them. You said something that was really cool that I actually repeated multiple times at the convention, is asking for a take back is a no-win situation. Either your opponent feels bad about it because he said no, or he feels bad about it because he gave you something that helped him defeat himself. It's a really smart thing to say. It's so true to the situation. But as a player, like, when you make a mistake like that, your first and like almost automatic action is to ask for it. It's weird, that paradigm. It's very neat being aware of your mental state and being able to work past it.
Yeah, I mean, I made lots of mistakes in my life. I try to own them. And personally, I learn a lot more from that, right? Those moments I'm going to remember a lot more than when I move the model correctly. And that's the kind of mental repetition that I personally like to build. Yeah, and I really meant that. I mean, like I said, I really think asking for a take back is a no-win situation. I've noticed a lot of what we're talking about is improving on mental aspects of the game. Do you think there's anything else the majority of the players should be thinking about to improve?
So, obviously, learning all the rules, interactions, and positioning requirements of the game is a monumental task. It's not really possible. You can, like, it's conquerable with commitment and time, but it's not great. Like, I've played the game seriously for a while now, and I know maybe 60, 70% of the rules and interactions. I can't tell you how many times I message Travis or someone else being like, hey, how does this work? Like, we have a WTC chat, and I think I ask, like, maybe at least one person in the chat once a month. Like, I'm sitting in a casual game, and, like, I take a photo of the game, and I'm like, here, how does this interaction work? And almost every single time I opponent, like, the people in the chat are like, you're an idiot, it works like this. That's like, I'm a very committed player. It's impossible to know everything. I think that the most important thing you could do is try to take as much away from every game you play as possible. I can't stress this enough. Being aware of, like, where you are mentally and being putting yourself in a position to learn as much as possible is how you get better. It's how you improve. So where I think the majority of players need to improve, like, as a whole, is the way they look at the game. And I don't mean that as, like, a giant slam against the community. I mean that as a lot of people tend to look at the game very, very binary. This beats this. This loses to this. We look at the game as, like, black and white matchups. Well, Karchev should always beat this caster, unless I screw up or, like, something like that. Like, I'm guilty of thinking like this, too. We all do it. Like, Gas V3 should windmill slam dunk this matchup. Being aware that you're thinking so confidently about a matchup and, like, that's where you are mentally is super important, because, like, when you're not aware of that and you lose a game, your immediate response is going to be to make up excuses. Well, I got diced. Oh, well, I just positioned poorly. Oh, I made a mistake. Whatever it may be. But, like, the more astute, the person who's trying to actually learn from that game is going to look at it and poke holes in all of where he thought he was good. So, like, we played a game, Gas V3 versus Iron Mother. And during the game, like, going into the matchup, a couple people by us were like, oh, you're just going to get feedback to death. And I was like, no, I'm not. And you were like, no, you're not. And then you're just like, oh, they're just going to pull in a jacket turn and kill it or kill two. And I was like, that's not going to happen either. And, like, that matchup ends up becoming, like, this really weird positioning matchup that's super terrain dependent. If in that game I was like, well, I'm just going to get feedback to death, then I play the game completely differently. Like, if I thought so binarily about how that assassination run worked, I play the game really defensively. I try not to do anything. Instead, I just camped three or four every turn and ran my jacks at you. And thinking about the game in a non-linear way and thinking about it dynamically, like, how is my opponent going to try to beat me, is the way you need to approach the game. Because once you're able to put yourself into your opponent's shoes, then you're able to actually play, like, actually able to beat them as a player and not just play what's on the table.
Yeah, and I think expanding on that a little bit, something we hadn't covered is navigating the list chicken. And you can't make a proper list chicken determination without understanding both of your opponent's lists and what they're trying to do with them, and fully understanding how your lists interact with each of them. So I do think that's definitely important. And one of the hardest things about War Machine, I mean, like you said, there's so many matchups, over 200 casters now. It's just kind of insane.
Yeah, we exist in a time where there's more depth to the game than there's ever been. And I can't tell you how many times, like, before a game, I just open up the war room and read my opponent's cards. Like, as a very real example, Tim and I drove 16 hours together in the car to MomCon.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. We drove 16 hours together. During that 16-hour drive, we basically dojoed my lists, like, worked on little cool tweaks we could do. And, like, Tim's a really good player and very amazing at list theory. And I like to think that together we're, you know, two very good Canadian WTC players building really cool lists. And I, like, we drove down together and we played each other round two. And it ended up being this, like, really cool cat and mouse game. But I 100% opened up his army cards. Like, after talking with him for 16 hours about his lists and my lists, we 100% opened up each other's army cards and, like, looked through them again. And we're asking each other's questions before we had even picked lists. That's where you have to be at if you want to be competitive. You can't assume you know everything. You have to go in there being like, I'm going to learn something this game. Let's have it not be learning how to lose this game.
No, I think that's fantastic advice, Matt. So, Matt, I know one of the big things you're looking forward to is Lock and Load, but for me personally, I'm really excited for the day after Lock and Load, and that's when the new ADR takes place, and that's when Champions kind of comes into its own. Do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, so personally excited, and I feel like the only way I can explain this is giving the whole picture. So if you've played War Machine pretty much at all, you should be familiar with the concept of the ADR. The ADR is the active duty roster. It's a list of warcasters from each faction that are allowed in Masters to take a Vanguard or allowed to be played in Champions. Well, in the day after Lock and Load, that's entirely changing. So how it used to be is in Champions, you could only play the four casters that are on ADR. That is staying. You can only play the casters that are on ADR. But ADR being a thing in Masters is going away. So no longer will you get the Vanguard points. No longer will you get any reward for limiting yourself in Masters. It'll be a truly unlimited format. However, Champions is changing to be the more limited format, even more than before. And it is the best thing I think has happened in War Machine in a long time. We've talked about it a lot in this podcast, is how deep the game is right now and how much there is in it. Like over 200 casters and like 4,000 entries in the game. And like it's impossible to know all of that. Well, the new Champions format says, we agree. We agree there is a lot in this game. And instead of having to learn the rules for all 4,000 models, or however many it is, instead, you have to learn the rules for these three to four warcasters and these two themes. So you've heard it right. There's three to four warcasters, depending if you're a limited faction or a full faction. And every faction gets a choice of two themes. So Crix ADR, as a good example, is Lich 1, Scar 3, Gorshade 1, Captain Iakos, and Agathea. Every faction gets their battle box caster. This is super important. So most of the full faction ADRs, or I think all of the full faction ADRs, are five casters. And those five casters can be built in either of two themes. So for Crix, it's Scourge or Black Industries. You cannot repeat the themes, I think. I don't think you can have a pairing of the same theme. I think that's one of the limitations. So instead of having to learn all of the 20 casters in Crix and all their interactions and then all five of the theme forces or six of the theme forces or whatever, now you only have to learn the rules and interactions for two theme forces and five casters. So like that reduces that faction's depth by 90%. Like no longer, like it's the amount of knowledge you need to have in the game inherently is reduced by like 80 to 90% as a whole. So it ends up being this like really cool and interesting limited format because it is more limited. So that's like obviously better, but it's also a really good place to learn the game. You would think that like you would want to learn the game in Masters where there's as much depth as possible and cool things, but it's actually the opposite. When someone's learning the game, you want them to be focused on learning to play this hyper limited format. It makes the game much more conquerable. Like you can go about learning 100% of the rules in it and be confident that you'll know everything that you're going to be playing against. It's super cool, and it teaches you to think outside the box and the themes. I mean, like, even though the box is more limited, to build good lists and, like, kind of solve the meta of what champions will be, you have to, like, kind of construct these really cool lists. Like, a good example is Morvana 1 in Circle. She's terrible in Masters because there's so much RFP and Dispel and, like, all this other really dumb stuff. But in Champions, where there's basically no RFP, all of a sudden she's backbreaking. It's super cool. It's like this own little special meta that exists. And it's really interesting and deep, and I love everything about it.
Yeah, a few things you didn't go over that I think are important to mention is growing on that battle box casters, right? So your first buy into the game, you can take that all the way up to be your first Champions list. The other thing is Champions has shifted to be a one list format with a second list being optional. So it's by far the cheapest way to start playing tournaments. And as you said, in a much smaller pond, which I think is only good for fostering and growing local metas.
Yeah, I think that being a one list format is also super cool. So if you don't know what D&C, Divide and Conquer, it meant that you had to play both your lists in an event. So like this has been in every Champions format. And so what this meant for me personally was I had to play usually five rounds of Denegra 2 and one round of one of my other casters, or five rounds of Old Witch 2 and one round of another caster, whatever it is. Because, you know, we all, like, every faction has that one caster that you want to play a bunch in. Gone are the days of D&C. In are the days of playing what you want as many times as you want.
And I think that's a fantastic change.
I agree with you. I think it's a very freeing and liberating change. And obviously, starting someone out on Champions is a very good way for them to be able to, you know, learn the game without being kind of scared away by its depth. There's so much to learn that like being like, okay, look, here's your forecasters, build that one list that you really like. Like every single new player to the game doesn't build a pairing. They build one list. So now you're like, here, buy your battle box. Here, we'll do an escalation league for that battle box. Oh, look, now that escalation league is your champions list. Go play in a champions event. It's a perfect segue, and it feels really good.
Absolutely. And the only thing I'll say to follow up on that is obviously the press gang's gone. So the onus of running event has falls to us players. So as you guys organize events, you know, think about champions. Maybe you don't need to have 12 steamrollers, one a month, right? Maybe you can have 9 steamrollers, 3 champions events. Maybe you have, you know, 6 steamrollers, 3 champions events, and you throw in some caster drafts. You know, get outside the box, try to incorporate people who you might be missing in the way you're currently running your local events.
So I think you touched on a very important subject there is, you know, appreciating your local meta and its events. Not every player is a hyper competitive convention going uber nerdy, like mathematician, statistician, War Machine player. Like, that's not everyone.
I feel like you're calling me out a little bit.
I mean, I've seen you play War Machine. and by that, I mean you're a great player. So appreciate your meta, guys. Like, even though, like, the players who are not super hardcore can have something to offer you, whether it be a fun game or, like, maybe a way to look at something that you haven't looked at it before. Maybe they find a weird solution to a problem that you didn't find yourself. There's no reason to ignore, you know, someone that's in your game trying to learn something, trying to get better, or, like, just trying to have fun just because you think you're a better player than them or because your ego tells you you should put them down. Be aware of that and just, you know, try to help people as much as you can. It's a community. And what makes a community truly good is, you know, people working at it and doing their best to help it grow.
Absolutely. And one other thing I've noticed traveling to national events this year is the number of people to come to these events and they don't play in the stars of the show. They don't play in champions. They don't play in masters, but they'll be there for scrambles and they'll be there for caster draft and all these funny, quirky things. And they're having a great fucking time. And that's what you should try to foster local. Get these people playing. And you know what? In a year, that person might be like, you know what? Champions looks like fun. Let me do that. Let me try this thing at masters now. I feel more comfortable at events playing with a clock. So like you said, you know, appreciate your meta, try to understand what it needs, not just what you need, and foster that in any means possible.
I have a really good story that happened recently about this is I have a local who for like the last 9 months has been a pretty casual player with no real goals or anything. And he's been showing up playing casual game nights. Occasionally he goes to steamrollers. He's a really cool guy, but hasn't really been like committed to getting better at the game. Just last week, he messages me and he's like, okay, Matt, what do I need to do to get better? He's like, I want to start getting good at the game. And like, that's because over the last 9 months, I've been putting in effort, grinding games with the guy, figuring stuff out, helping him with his list, talking to him, encouraging him. And now he's at the point where he's like, okay, War Machine competitively is fun for me now. And I want to get better. So me helping him get better in the long run also serves me. Because if he becomes a good enough player that he gets to smash me every week, then I learn how to get, like, I learn that matchup. I learn all of those things. Sometimes helping your meta actually helps yourself as well.
Absolutely. I mean, more people playing at a high level can only benefit you. Yes, it might make it harder for you to win your local steamroller, but you're getting better games, you're learning, you're getting better practice. And that's ultimately what I think you should be going for.
I agree.
So Matt, I know you're a busy guy trying to reclaim your throne in Scotland. I think we had a great conversation today. You definitely gave me some points to take away next time I'm making a pair. The concept of sweepers and pivots, I think, are really beneficial. And just trying to hammer home that champions shouldn't be a redheaded stepchild. Let's try to make champions great again. I think you're all great points. So thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you have a great week and good luck at some of your upcoming events. Where can people look to see you?
So I'm going to be at Lock and Load. Well, before that, I'm going to be at the Tech, which is a team tournament in Montreal. And then we're going to be at Lock and Load. And then following that, we're going to be at Tabletop Gaming Expo. After that, I have a few other events, but not off the top of my head. That's like the next 2 months. But it was a pleasure being on here. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I definitely feel like we talked about a lot of the subjects that we wanted to cover. And I'm really happy with the conversation we had. So it was a great pleasure. And thank you very much.
And that wraps up today's episode of Tangential with Sung Soo. Be sure to like and follow my Facebook page at CO Wargaming to stay up to date and not miss a beat. You can also follow me on Twitter at Sung Soo, TSEUNGTSU. I want to thank Muse on Minis for hosting us and Matt McWaters for coming on the pod. If you have any ideas on something you'd like to hear, or maybe you yourself want to be on the pod, please let me know. I hope you found this entertaining, educational, and inspiring. Till next time, cheers.